Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 4th of Adar. Today we're going to see a couple of tshuvot of the Noda Yehuda from the late 18th century, and he's writing, so the first two tshuvot are written on the same day, the 4th of Adar of Tov Kuf Mem of 1780. And we'll see them together. They're written to the same person, to Rabbi Reuven Rachnitz, who I found two other tshuvot in Noda Yehuda that were written to him as well, and the last one of those, it says he was the Av Beis Din, he was like the head of the rabbinical court in Vesprin, but I don't know where that is, and I asked somebody who actually knows the Noda Yehuda well, who didn't know anything about him, and I haven't been able to find anything about him, so it's open call. If you know anything about Rabbi Reuven Rachnitz, you can feel free to email me at grothst@gmail.com. In any case, the first of those tshuvot, we'll get to as many of them. There are four total. We'll get to them as many of them as we can. The first of those is the Noda Yehuda in the Mahadura Tinyana in the second volume, Or HaChaim Siman Mem Vav, from the 4th of Adar of Tavshid Mem. And he's writing to, he calls him Ahuvi Talmidi. It's a student of his, this Reuven Rachnitz, who he likes very much. But we're going to see in the course of the Tshuvot that the Noda Yehuda is going to try to show him sort of other ways to learn and stuff like that. So we'll see. So the first Tshuva, he says there are two Tshuvot. And he says, you asked me, now, background to this little piece of the Tshuva is that on Shabbat, there's a question in halacha as to how far we're allowed to go. The Torah says you can't go out of your tchum on Shabbat, out of your borders on Shabbat. And so we today talk about tchum Shabbat as being alpayim amaz, being 2,000 amot outside of your town or city, wherever you're living. There's some discussion about whether that seems to be the Rabbanan. That seems very clearly to be the Rabbanan. There is some discussion there. Those who hold, including, I believe, the Rambam, who hold that 12 meal is a Torah level of Tchumin. The meaning that maybe it's true, it's only the Rabbanan, but let's suppose for whatever reason, you had to go outside of your Tchum, but the calculus would change if you had to also go 12 meal, which is about 6 to 8 miles. So if you have to go that far, that might be a d'oraita level. So that's the background you need to know. There are those who hold that way, that it's a d'oraita problem already at that point. Now, there's Goran Erevin on the Hamad Bet, which is talking about, so in the rabbinic question of Tchumin, you're only allowed to go 2,000 amot, which isn't all that much. 2,000 amot is clearly not even a mile. So it's somewhere between about 3/5 and 4/5 of a mile, a little bit less than those numbers. So one of the things that Chazal allowed in those kinds of situations, let's suppose I need to go somewhere that's just beyond that. So this, the distances that Gemara talks about in these situations have always troubled me because they seem very, very short compared to what people casually walk today. But in any case, the halacha was that let's suppose I'm in my town and beyond 2,000 amot, there's something I needed to get to. So an easy example would be, let's suppose I knew that my Rebbe, my teacher, was going to be somewhere tomorrow, and I wanted to be able to go greet him, learn from him, talk to him. So that's a cause where I'm allowed to try to do something to try to get there. So for my town, it's too far. But if I could only be theoretically living at the edge of my Tchum Shabbos, of my town, if I could be living there officially for Shabbos purposes, then I'd be able to reach wherever my Rebbe was. So if he was, you know, going to be within 4,000 amot of the edge of my town, then I would be able to get there if I could do this. So the answer is halacha allows doing this by what's called an Eruv Tchumin. So an Eruv Tchumin is where you leave the food for two meals so that in that place, and that in some official sense, establishes our Makom Shvita, the place that I'm officially living that Shabbat. Now, I can go back to my city and live and actually sleep at home, right? Sleep wherever I'm living, where I'm really living, and eat my Friday night meal wherever I'm really living because I'm within my tchum, I'm within the tchum of those two meals, and then I can also go to that other place. So that's called being konesh shvita. So the Gemara in Erevin, daf mem ben amud bet, mem hey amud bet, now I'm back in the tshuva already. The Gemara in Erevin says, what about letting a person be konesh shvita on the ocean? So let's say they're in a boat or something, and there's a concern about how far the boat's going to travel and something like that. Or where you're going to be. So he says, so Gemara asks that as a question. And when they give an answer, part of the answer is there's the suffix to divrehem. This whole question, whatever they're talking about in the Gemara and Erevin, which is not our concern right now, is a question on a derabbanan issue, on an issue derabbanan. And usually, when issues derabbanan come up, we pasken in lekula. We can allow ourselves to go into the lenient version. That's part of the way Chazal set up their system of legislation within Torah law. So this Rabbi Reuven Rachnitz writes to his teacher, the Noda Yehuda. He says, I don't understand. What if the boat over the course of Shabbat travels more than 12 mil. So they travel more than 12 mil, according to the opinion that says the 12 mil is chum d'oraita, right? The 12 mil is a d'oraita limit on travel on Shabbat, a total limit, then the Moran Arvin is not making any sense, because Moran Arvin says, I'll have Shvitah on my boat, it'll go, and it's only going to be a Drabbanan issue. But it's only a Drabbanan issue if it doesn't go 12 mil, but the boat over the course of a whole day can easily go 12 mil. That was the question. So, the Noda Yehuda answers, and he again says, over, gentle isn't quite the right term. He's very concerned that the recipient of these letters, I don't know how old he was, recipient of these letters, understands and feels that his Rebbe is very concerned with his welfare and likes him very much, because he's going to correct him in every single letter. So that's what he wants to make sure, that as he corrects him, that the kid, the recipient doesn't get upset about it. So here he says, so the answer is, he says, that even the opinion that says that Yud Bet Mil is Da'oraita, that's on land. Right, on land, there's a 12 mil limit. Which is 12 mil is 24,000 amot. An amot is between a foot and a half and 2 feet, depending on which opinion in the achronim you take. So it's, you know, so you do the math of the rest of that. I did some of the math for you. But on the seas, so he says, you look it up, it's only Drabbanan. He says, if you look it up in Shulchan Aruch, or Chaim Simon Tov Dalet, Sif Bet, but the second paragraph in chapter 404, Tov Dalet, you can see it. So that's a subtle dig. I don't think he means it as a dig, just a reminder. It's right there, right? It's right there in Shulchan Aruch, and therefore that sees is only Drabbanan. Merely Ikar Kniyat Shvita Okiyanus Eino Dvar Torah. That riding on the seas can't be a Dvar Torah in terms of Tchum Shabbos. I will point out that I just made sure to check up this Or Chaim. In our version of Or Chaim, we only think there's one Seif there. So when I say it's the second Seif, it must be the Noda Yehuda thought of things that we don't think of as a separate Seif, because it does talk there about being in the sea and how the sea works and whether or not it affects our Tchum Shabbos. And there is room there for sure to understand that whatever Tchum you have on the seas is Drabbanan, not D'oraita. That's easy, but there is no Seif Bet. So if you try to look it up, it's just the end of the one Seif. There is Tov Dalet. In any case, point is that once you say that it's Rabbanan on the seas, then it can never be. If we say that it is correct and true that on the Okeanos and the ocean, any Shvita you get is not going to be a Torah issue. It's going to be a Rabbanan issue. Now, he had asked another question about that issue, because let's remember that in the original Yom Kippur service that you used to have in the Beit HaMikdash, that we hope once again to have one day very, very soon, part of it was you sent a seir, a goat, to Azazel to be thrown off a mountain or a hill in the Midbar, in the desert. And the man who took him out, they used to place tents or places where theoretically he could eat. The Gemara says he never did actually eat, but where theoretically he could eat and drink, because if he needed to, if he felt ill, if he felt weak, and he felt like he had to eat, he was going to be able to. He never did, but he would have been able to. So the question is, how far out did he go in the Midbar? When you saw him there, they talk about the fact that you did this even on Shabbos. It was an Ish Iti. He went out even on Shabbos. The Gemara there says, Lamai Hilchata. And Rashi says, because if it's a question of Chumin, you can say, why do we need a Pasuk telling us that you would do this service of the taking the goat to Azazel? So the Gemara says, so if your worry was the issue of Tchumin, it's only Drabbanan. Okay, so we've got this man going out into the desert. The Gemara has a derivation of the fact that you could do it even on Shabbos, but why would you need a pasuk for it? There's no problem here on a Torah level, right? That's the Gemara's question. So the Rav Reuven Magnitz had wanted to know from the Noda Yehuda, I don't understand, for the Rambam, he does have a problem. Why does he have a problem? Because from Yerushalayim to the thing is 12 mil. That's what it says in the Gemara, the Gemara figures it out. So if it's 12 mil, for the Rambam, it's the right question. Why wouldn't the answer just be that, meaning not, the problem isn't with Rashi. The problem was with the Gemara saying, what do you need a pasuk for? So how does it say the Mai Hilchata? So the Noda Yehuda says, you know, it's a good question at first glance. L'fon Riyat, if you read it casually, for sure, that's a very good question. But if you look carefully, and I skipped, I think, one of his answers. I'm sorry, no. If you look carefully, the Gemara offers a couple of answers. And Ibrahim Ema Gemara Dehak Breita, that you go on to the Gemara there. He says that they end up getting their information from a Sifra, And a sifra is, we generally assume, if it's an anonymous one, comes from Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda, as it happens, if you look in Yomah, the next Amud, he held that it was only 10 mil. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda's answer is that the sources that are being dealt with here, at least this is the way the Rambam could have read it, not necessarily so, but the way the Rambam could have read it, is the sources being dealt with here come from a Tana. They seem anonymous, and if they're anonymous, you would have thought maybe that they go according to all opinions, but he's saying, no, if you check it up, turns out that it's really according to the opinion that also held that the distance was only 10 mil. So if it's only 10 mil, then even the Rambam holds that it's only a Tchumid Rabbanan issue, which is a Rabbanan issue, and therefore you wouldn't need a Pasuk to tell you that you can do this on Shabbos. There's another piece of this tshuva, but I think I'm going to jump over it to get to other tshuvot of the Rabbis that are more, I mean, this is more about why one sugya refers to whether or not there's a whole issue, but whether or not we think there's a problem with Eruvin issues on Shabbos or not. And we don't have to get into it here, and it's just theoretical about how you could reconstruct the Gemara. But that was the first tshuva to Rabbi Nachnitz. He wanted to know about the opinion that says that 12 mil is the right to issue. And if 12 mil is the right to issue, one question was about the seas, and the answer there was that even according to the opinion, 12 mil is the right to issue for Tchum Shabbat, for the length and this we're allowed to travel on Shabbat, it only means on land and not by the sea. And then the second question was in terms of Yom Kippur and the time of the Beit HaMikdash and going out to the edge, and one of the answers that Rabbi Yehuda gives, he has another answer as well, but one of the answers he gives is that you could construct that Gemara to be according to the opinion that there was only 10 mil that distance, not 12 mil. That's the first of the Tshuvot from the 4th of Adar of Tuf Kuf Mem. There's another one in the same volume of Rabbi Yehuda, but this is in the Choshen Mishpat section. Remember that different people construct their, set up their Tshuva books different ways. So you can either, but very often you'll do it by the overall set of topics. So if you have two questions from Reuven Rakhnis, one of which is an Orach Chaim question, one of which is a Choshen Mishpat question, you'll separate them in the book into the two sections, even though they came, you know, in the same envelope, as it were. So, on the 4th of Adar of Tuf Kuf Mem of 1780, Choshen Mishpat Simon Yud Aleph, he asked about a question in the Mishnah Lemelech in Hilchot Melachim, Perek Yud, Halacha Zayin, Chapter 10, Halacha 7, Barash al-Ghazi asked a similar question. He wrote, there's a bunch of people, in other words, who are asking a question, and it builds off of a Tosos. They have a question on Tosos. Tosos says the following. This is Tosos on Daf Pechet Amit Aleph. I forgot where. I think it's in Gittin, but I have to look it up. Sorry, it's also above a comma. You know, sometimes I excerpt these so that I can just present them as succinctly as possible. You may not think it's as succinctly as possible, but for me, it's definitely as succinctly as possible as I can do. So I leave out some things sometimes. In any case, it's a Gemara, and it's a Tosfos above Metzia. What Tosfos says, the Gemara derives the idea, or gives us the idea, that an Eved, by an Eved we mean an Eved Kenani here. It's a person who becomes a slave, however that worked in the olden days. You know, I often think this, that there's so much about slavery that we assume being like the slavery we know of from the South with blacks, and it's just not the world in which the Gemara lives. It's a whole different kind of a thing. There's a whole different emotions around it and cultural values to it, by the people experiencing it as well. And that doesn't mean that it's okay. It doesn't mean we should do it today. It doesn't mean any of that. But it does mean that you just have to be ready to know that it's very, very different. So the Gemara talks about the fact that Neved Kenani, if a non-Jew becomes a slave to a Jewish person, they're supposed to partially convert. They convert to, they are Mitkaya for Avdus. And that after that point, once they convert, he would become, this slave, as he converted, would become obligated in all mitzvot and all commandments, except for those that are time-related commandments, right? So his time is not his own, I guess, in a sense, and therefore he's not obligated in them. Now, the Gemara gets that from La, that the Torah talks about La when it comes to a woman. It talks about La in the context of an Eved, however it comes up, and therefore that creates a connection between them, and from that Gzeirah Shavah, from that connection between them, we see that they are obligated in similar kinds of mitzvot. Now, Tosfos there says, La does not come to exclude the slave from anything, to be machmir on the slave in anything, and therefore, you might have thought that he could give testimony. And that's why the Gemara has to talk about, needs a pasuk to talk about whether or not a non-Jew, an Eved Kenani, he can give testimony. Because it says, V'amdu shnei ha'nashim, when the Torah talks about testimony, it says the two men will stand before Hashem. So an Eved Kenani is a man. So Why shouldn't that be? So these Achronim all wondered. Gemara Chagiga tells us, this is where the Tosfos comes in. The Tosfos is building off that issue, but the Achronim say, the Gemara Chagiga tells us that, how do we know that a non-Jew doesn't have to fulfill the mitzvah of re'iyah, of going to the Beit HaMikdash 3 times a year. So it says, I don't understand, any mitzvah that a woman's not chayevet in, not obligated in, a man's not obligated to do that. A slave, a non-Jewish slave, a partially converted Jew, a slave, is not obligated to do it. And you're trying to say, I don't understand, isn't that using the woman thing to be machmir? And Tosfot had said that this Gzeirah Shavah is not to take him away from anything. So that's the question that he wanted to know. He wanted to understand, does the Note of Yehuda have any response to these Achronim? So let's be clear. The Achronim's question is, Tosfot says, this Gzeirah Shavah, this comparison to a woman that's made regarding a partially converted non-Jewish slave, does not mean to exclude the non-Jewish slave from anything, and therefore, the fact that the non-Jewish slave is like a woman halakhically doesn't mean he couldn't also give testimony where it says Vemdu Shin Anashim. It doesn't mean he's not a man halakhically. It means he's like a woman for these obligations, but it doesn't mean to remove him from anything. So the question the Achronim say is, so I understand, how could that be? Because you have a Gemara in Chagiga that says that we remove him from, we don't have him be considered part of Mitzvah Re'iyah, because anything that a woman's not included in, a man, he's not included in this non-Jewish slave. So that's so the Note of Yehuda says, I'm very surprised by these three great Torah scholars, why they had that problem, and they didn't have a problem in general. Why wouldn't you just say to me, make a non-Jewish slave obligated in all mitzvot, including those that are time-related, and all over Shas, all over the Gemara, you have that that non-Jewish slaves are not obligated, that all those mitzvot, asei, shazman, gramo, time-related commandments, the positive time-related commandments, non-Jewish slaves are not obligated in. So he says, it seems to me, and he, with mechilat kvodam, with apologies to their kavod, if I'm, you know, getting something wrong, or I'm saying something that's against them that I shouldn't be, but it seems like they didn't notice what the Tosfos really meant. When the Tosfos says, the gzera shava, the verse of la-la, makes him like a Jew, but not to exclude him from anything, the like a Jew that it's making him be like is like a woman, right? Because that's the Gzeirah Shavah. The first law in each case, one applies to him, the non-Jewish slave, and one applies to Jewish women, and that's the Gzeirah Shavah. That's the connection in the verses. So therefore, says the Note of Yehuda, this is the way you should have understood it, and then it's all going to become clear. The Torah was given to the Jewish people, and therefore, if you're not a Jew, you're not obligated in the Torah. That's just, you're not obligated in the Torah. It's just not relevant to you. And therefore, when you have a non-Jewish slave, he's non-Jewish. So the fact that he goes into a mikvah to become part of, to become a slave, we wouldn't have known what that meant, because it doesn't mean he's a full Jew, because he's still a slave, and Jews can't be slaves in the sense that non-Jews are slaves to the Jews. So the Torah gave us, was given to us to Moshe, and the Gzeirah Shavah comes to tell us that when this person and this man does this partial conversion, so that makes him obligated in the Torah in the ways that a Jewish woman are obligated. That's what it does. So in other words, that aspect of it is actually telling us many things that he's obligated in. It's adding to his obligation. When Tosfot says in Bava Metzia that the Gzeirah Shavah doesn't exclude him from anything, the reason Tosfot say that is because in the essence, the Gzeirah Shavah of La-La is telling us that he can do many, that he's obligated to do many, many things that we wouldn't have known about. But when it comes to Re'iyah, Kohen Ben HaMikdash, Shonah Chag, and it says, oh, he's only obligated what women are obligated, and that's not excluding him from something. We never knew to include him in anything like that. The only reason we have to include non-Jewish, partially converted slaves in obligations is exactly that, is that we have this Gzeirah Shavah. And the example from Chagiga was an example. So it's not that we're excluding him from the obligation in Re'iyah. It's that we're saying that Re'iyah doesn't fall in the category of those things in which he became obligated. But when it came to the idea of Eidus, of giving testimony, so there, you couldn't have La-La say you excluded him from, because the idea of testimony is set up by the Torah. The Torah just says, V'amdu shnei ha'anashim, when it comes to giving testimony. So you might have thought in terms of giving testimony, they'd be included just because they're men. So they're men, they're somewhat Jewish. We know they're somewhat Jewish from the comparison to women. So maybe they're all the way Jewish with this one limitation, just like women are all the way Jewish with this limitation. That was the point of the Tosfos. Tosfos was saying you can't be sure that they're not included in testimony, because that's really irrelevant to the La-La situation. La-La tells us that they're Jewish in some senses, in these senses for sure. Since they're Jewish in some senses, in these senses for sure, That's what Allah tells you, but he can't exclude anything. So therefore, when it comes to testimony, where the Torah just says, Shtehan Hashim, maybe they count on Hashim for that, that's what Tosfos was getting into. So that's the Noda B'Yudah's resolution of that question, of that problem, in terms of this, those that all these Achronim had asked the question. So those are the Tshuvot of the Noda B'Yudah, two Rivim Vaknitz, that were written for the 4th of Adar of Tavshin Mem. So I looked up the names, because it's an odd name, and he appears twice more in the Noda B'Yehuda. There are two more Tshuvot written to the Rebbe Reuven Rachnitz. Those ones are not dated, but they're kind of interesting. So I think we'll get to one more of them the time we have left, but maybe we'll get to both if we worked a little hard. So the first one is from Madhur Tinyana also, Yoredei Ayin Bet. So here you had a problem of a Jewish man left wine with a non-Jew. Now, the problem with wine with a non-Jew is that non-Jews touching wine makes it what's called stam yenam, right? We're not allowed to use stam yenam. So when you ship wine with non-Jews, you wanted to make sure that you didn't have that problem. So the way that you made sure that you didn't have that problem was you sealed it. You double sealed it, really. So a Jew does that. He double seals the wine and he sends it with a non-Jew. But the wine was still, I don't know why so well, it's still, the word in Hebrew is sisa. It's like fermenting still, but also bubbling. And I'm not sure how wine, I didn't know that the wine does that. But what happened in this situation was they put the wine in the barrel and it was still bubbling, still fermenting, and so it the force of it pushed off the top of the barrel. The wine's in the barrel, it's bubbling over, I guess they filled it very high, and it's pushed over, and it bubbles up, and it breaks, and it opens, and it pushes it off, and that breaks the seal. So the non-Jew who was either shipping it or was watching it for the Jew came to tell the Jew that he should come fix it. Right? So why did the non-Jew do this? We'll get to it. But you said le'esor. Rabbi Reuven Rachnitz Paskin, you can't use the wine anymore. It's tam yenim. Why is it tam yenim? Because the wine was open and uncovered for a while. Open and uncovered for a while with a in a non-Jew's presence. The non-Jew has control of it. We can't watch it. We treat that as tam yenim. So the Rama in Kuf Lamed in 130 paragraph 8 says it's only, seems to say, he does say, it's only, we only have to worry about it if the seal, so there must say it's only if the seal gets broken, seems to have been broken bikavana, on purpose, by a man. But if you can say that it happened on its own, or that children did it, and they didn't mean to do it, so then the wine is still mutter. But Rabbi Rechner said, but the Ramah, if you're careful about it, the Ramah is talking about a case where the non-Jew didn't know about it, right? So if in other words, the Ramah is saying, if you don't have any reason that the non-Jew knew about it, the non-Jew didn't know about it, as far as you know, and it wasn't broken on purpose, or it doesn't seem like it was broken on purpose, then you're allowed to rely on the fact that it wasn't the non-Jew who broke it, it just broke on its own, or some kids broke it, and you don't have to worry about it. But in our case, even if we believe him, the Rav Reuven Rachnitz says, it seems like it has to be usher because the wine was in his possession, open, and available. In other words, what Rav Reuven Rachnitz was holding, and I'm not saying he's, and the Noda B'Yehuda is going to tell him that there's other ways to see it, in a gentle, kind way, but Rav Rachnitz is holding, is pointing out, is that it seems like if a non-Jew is in possession of Jewish wine, without supervision by a Jew, then we have to assume or worry that he taught it, that he touched it, and as we're worried that he touched it, then it becomes tam yenam, and we have a problem. We can't use that wine anymore. We certainly can't drink that wine anymore. So shouldn't that be the issue here? And it's not a function of whether we have to think that a non-Jew is a terrible person or whatever. Just halacha. The halacha is made in blanket terms. In blanket terms, if a non-Jew is possession of wine without supervision, we have to think of it as tam yenam. So there is this Ramah that says, no, you don't. But in the Ramah's case, it says, we're being active. You need to Ramah carefully. It seems like the non-Jew didn't even know that the seal was broken. If we thought that the non-Jew knew the seal was broken, we would have that problem. That's what he's passing here. So he thinks that the wine is usher. So, says the Rabbi Huda, Ahuvi Talmudi, right, my beloved student, you clearly think like your teacher. That's a huge compliment, right? You clearly learn well from me. The fact is, I have already passing that way in another situation. But when I did it, says the Rabbi Yehuda, the non-Jew was traveling, meaning it was like you shipped the wine with a non-Jew, either by land or by sea, and then when he got to wherever the Jew was, when he met up with him again, he said, oh, you know what? The seal broke on its own, and there was nothing that I could do about it. So there the Rabbi Yehuda says, I had to be out there, I had to prohibit the wine, because since, like you said, since the non-Jew knew about it, then we have to worry that he knew about it and he touched it. And this is just his like excuse for how it turns out. Meaning, the reason why we seal wine is because we want to make sure the non-Jew is not touching the wine. So if I seal it and then it's broken, then I there are two possibilities. Either it really just broke on its own, the non-Jew is telling the truth, or the non-Jew decided he wanted some of the wine, broke the seal, and now has come up with a story. Since we can't know which is which, you have to say the wine is prohibited. But in our case, he thinks that there's room to say maybe it's okay. Because he points out, why did the note of Yehuda insist that the seal had to look like it was broken on purpose? In the case we just gave, even if it wasn't broken on purpose, right? Even if it doesn't look like it was broken on purpose, we'd still say it's aser. So why did the note of Yehuda, why did the Ramah say, no, if it's broken on purpose, then you have to aser it? So he should have said, only if the non-Jew knew that it was broken, right? If that's the standard, right? The Ruri Rakhtis had said, if the non-Jew knows about it, that's the problem. But the Ramah doesn't mention that issue of knowing about it. So why is that? So it's so says the Rabbi Yehuda, it must be that in the general case, we think that the non-Jew doesn't intend to touch the wine because he doesn't want to get caught. Because if he gets caught, then whatever reason the Jew left the wine with him, you know, and he paid him for it, and he this and he this, it'll ruin their relationship because he'll know that he's no longer a trustworthy guy. So if it happened on its own, the non-Jew thinks to himself, if I stay quiet, then they'll suspect me of having done it myself, and that's why he comes to tell you. So if he doesn't come to tell you, presumably he didn't know. But when he comes to tell you right away, when he comes to tell you, we can assume it was right away. In other words, when the guy's on a trip, the note of Yehuda is saying, then I have a problem. Even if he claims it opens on its own, he was on a journey, I couldn't have been there, I didn't this and this and this. But where I'm around all the time, and he hasn't left anywhere, that's why the Ramah said, if it looks like it was broken on purpose, you have a problem. Then you'll have a problem, even if the non-Jew came what seems like right away to tell you. Right? If the non-Jew tells you it got broken, and I'm coming to tell you, but it looks like it was broken on purpose, then the Ramah is saying you have a problem. But if it wasn't broken on purpose, says the note of Yehuda, what the Ramah might be telling us is that if it wasn't broken on purpose, it doesn't look like it was broken on purpose, then we have the right to assume that the non-Jew came right away. Because let's say it didn't come at all. Let's say I just come and I find that it's open. Then I can assume maybe that the non-Jew didn't know about it. So that's the point. So that's the Rebuta's avenue to a leniency here, that maybe you could say the wine is okay. That even though he himself is prohibited wine in similar situations, there was a key factor that the non-Jew was somewhere where the Jew wasn't able to be there for him, and therefore you couldn't check up on him, you didn't know about it. But in situations where the Jew is around and therefore could come at any time, and therefore there's reason to think that the non-Jew would be concerned about the Jew catching him if he was doing something problematic and nefarious, so then if the non-Jew himself comes to us, then he just says, I think there's room to suggest that there's no obvious evidence that it was broken on purpose. I think there's just that's okay. But then he says, but since it's a new idea, it's a svara chadasha, so it's interesting that Rabbi Yehuda resists. I've seen other meshivim, and I won't say who they are, but I've seen other meshivim who seem comfortable with, I have a new idea, and I'll pass it on the basis of it. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says, it's a new svara, it's a new idea, and I'd like to check it out. I want to think about it more, check it with other people, all those kinds of things. So I'd say, if it's not a situation of hefsed meruba, if it's not a situation where there's a tremendous loss, where there's significant loss here, then it's better if you say that it's prohibited, like you yourself said. But if it is a hefsed meruba, then you can be matya, then you can allow it, and it's okay. Okay, there's one more quick tshuva in the note of Yehuda. This is from Or Chaim Siman Chav Zayin, and I don't have time to do it fully, but it's about a question of, you had fatted geese that didn't get salted within 3 days of being shechted. So the halacha is, it's a later halacha, it's not actually in the Gemara, but the halacha is that we think the blood dries up within then, and then if you salt it after that, then it doesn't work fully enough, so therefore the only way you can eat them is by roasting them. So if you didn't salt it within 3 days, that's what we hold. We hold that the blood dries in, and since the blood dries in, you can't get it out, and the only way you can eat it is by roasting it, because roasting pulls blood. That's also how, for example, that's how we eat liver, right? You have to roast liver, you have to broil it, and get the blood not to soak into it, and that's just the way that you have to do it, because it's the only way to get the blood out. So too, with things that haven't been salted within 3 days. So that part, he agrees with his student of Rectus, that's what happens. But, he says, he does think, another issue, let's say the third day was Shabbos. So if the third day was Shabbos, the River Ekta seems to have held, you couldn't pour water on there to avoid the 3 days. I mean, the 3 day issue is, and you're stuck. It's 3 days if it wasn't salted within the 3 days, and therefore it dries up. And therefore, if you soak it within those 3 days, it seems like it stops it from doing it, right? So that's the halacha. So what if the third day is Shabbos? So there were those who held that you couldn't do it because of muktzah issues, because the geese themselves are not edible, and therefore you couldn't do anything to touch them or move them, and therefore you couldn't pour the water on them. And there the Rebbe Yehuda disagreed, for reasons that we're not going to be able to get into right now, but he disagreed. He said, no, you could pour the water on it, and therefore you can maintain it and sustain it and keep it so that you can then salt it after Shabbos. And he says this in particular because when it comes to fatted geese, once you roast them, the whole point of fattening them up was the fat. So when you roast them, that gets rid of a lot of the fat, and therefore it's really a big hefty group issue, and therefore he thinks you're allowed to do this, to pour water on them. And that is the fourth tshuva of the River Rakhnas. So we see a relationship with the River Rakhnas that we see, as far as I could find, these are the only ones who vote to River Rakhnas in the Rabbi Yehuda. We see him teaching his students something about Pesach, something about how to learn Gemaras, and usually helping him find his ways to more leniencies that he didn't on his own, because as the common saying goes, it's easier to be a machmir, it's a lot harder to be lenient, and this is the Rabbi Yehuda showing us how to be lenient. This is a tshuvot for the 4th of Adar, responsible day. Have a great day.